adati svapadantikam vansha kalpaturubhyascha kripa sindubhyarevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha jaya shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadarha shri vasari gaura bhakta vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, O Namo Bhagavate. O Namo Bhagavate, Vasudevaya. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 3, Text 27. Te Deva Siddha Parighita Pavitra Gato. Ye sadhava samantrisho bhagavat prapana tanopasidata hare gataya biguptam naisham vayam nachavaya prabhava madande
Jai Hare Krishna. Mothers, they, Deva, by the demigods, Siddha, and the inhabitants of Siddha Loka, Parigita, Sangh, Pavitragata, whose pure narrations, yea, who, Sadhava, devotees, Samadrisha, who see equally, who see everyone equally, Bhagavat Prapana, being surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Tan, them, na, not, Basidata, should go near, Hiri, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Gadaya, by the club, Abhiguptan, being fully protected, na, not, esham, of these, vayam, we, na, cha, and also not, vaya, unlimited time, prabhavama, are competent, dande, and punishing. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, my dear servants, please do not approach such devotees, for they have fully surrendered to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are equal to everyone, and their narrations are sung by the demigods and the inhabitants of Siddha Loka. Please do not even go near them. They are always protected by the club of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore, Lord Brahma and I, and even the time factor, are not competent to chastise them. Purport, in effect, Yamaraj warned his servants, quote, my dear servants, despite what you may have done previously to disturb the devotees, henceforth you should stop. The actions of devotees who have surrendered unto the lotus feet of the Lord and who constantly chant the holy name of the Lord are praised by the demigods and the residents of Siddhaloka. These devotees are so respectable and exalted that Lord Vishnu personally protects them with the club in his hand. Therefore, regardless of what you have done this time, henceforth, you should not approach such devotees. Otherwise, you will be killed by the club of Lord Vishnu. This is my warning. Lord Vishnu has a club and chakra to punish non-devotees. Do not risk punishment by attempting to disturb the devotees. Not to speak of you, if even Lord Brahma or I were to punish them, Lord Vishnu will punish us. Therefore, do not disturb the devotees any further. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So the last section, Yamaraj has already described about Bhagavan, Bhakta, and Bhakti. And now these last few verses, he's concluding his address to the Yamadutas. And he's describing the next three verses. Who is it that they can approach? Who is it they should not approach? So that's the last section. So in this verse, he's telling who not to approach. This verse, he's telling who not to approach. So who are they not to approach? The devotees. There's this Bhagavat Prapanna. Those who are surrendered to the Lord, you are not to approach them. Then those devotees are described. Adjectives are given to describe what is their position. What is the position of a surrendered devotee? The first line, Te Deva Siddha Parigita Pavitragata. The Siddhas and the Devas are always singing their pure narrations. This first adjective. Anyone singing your pure narrations? We would like it to be the case. It's just like when Lord Chaitanya was glorifying Haridasa Thakur, I think. It's described that when he was glorifying him, it is as if he had five mouths glorifying Haridasa Thakur, speaking his glories. So the devotee is glorified by great personnel. We may be glorified by ignorant people. They will glorify us. Like Bhagavatam mentions, those who are like hogs, dogs, camels, and asses, they are glorified by persons who are also like hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. But if hog, dog, camel, and ass glorifies you, it is not very flattering. Only if someone qualified glorifies you does it become very special meaning, isn't it? Just like if one guru, sannyasi, he comes up to you and starts speaking your glories in front of the whole class, then you feel that I am very special. Isn't it? You don't want to feel that, but you do. So, Tadeva Siddha Parigita Pavitragata, this first adjective is given to describe surrendered devotees. The devas, the siddhas, they're always singing the narrations of such personalities. Then, sadhavaha, they're saintly, samadrisho, they see everyone with equal vision. Krishna describes that in Bhagavad Gita, Vidyavanaya Sampane, Brahmani Gavihashtani. Pandita Samadarshinaha. He says those who are made humbled by real knowledge, they see everyone with an equal vision. Pandita Samadarshinaha. So this verse has different applications depending on the transcendentalist that you're speaking about. And context of the verse is actually speaking about someone who perceives the Paramatma everywhere. So he sees how the Paramatma is equal towards all living entities. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu, Name Dveshosti Napriyaha, that I am equal towards all living entities. I don't favor anyone. I'm not against anyone. So those who perceive Paramatma by the practice of Yoga Mark, then they also are like that. They become like Krishna. They become equal towards everyone, not favoring one, not against another. They can also perceive how people are in different situations on account of their karma. But that doesn't make them favorable to some people who are perhaps more virtuous and unfavorable to those who are not virtuous. In fact, early on in the sixth chapter, Krishna describing such a yogi who has attained samadhi in his vision of Paramatma speaks how he sees pebbles and stones. What else? Mentioned? Gold. Yes, that's an important one, isn't it? He sees pebbles and stones and gold with an equal eye. And then higher than that is one who sees friend and an enemy and well-wisher and one who is neutral. He sees all these people with equal eye. That's even a higher yogi. So this yogi, those who do yoga mark, they attain samadhi, they attain perception of Paramatma, and they see with equal vision. Not favorable towards the virtuous or unfavorable towards the impious. They're just neutral. This is an equal vision, is there. And a devotee's sort of equal vision is maybe differently applied. He also sees in a similar way, but he sees that plus something extra. He also is not favorable towards one and unfavorable towards others. And as such, he shows mercy to everyone because everyone in ignorance. And just like Prahlad Maharaj is lamenting, Shoche tato vimukacheta sendriyarta, maya sukham paramudarato vimudan. That he's lamenting how the vimukha chetasaha, people's consciousness is turned away from Krishna on account of the indriyarta, on account of the senses. The senses are drawing their consciousness away from Krishna. And therefore, they're trying to carry the happiness, the burden of material enjoyment. So a devotee shows equal vision to them by speaking Krishna consciousness. Whether they're pious or impious, they don't see in terms of piety and piety. They see in terms of, these are all Krishna's people. These are Krishna's people. Krishna says in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita that all these entities are his. They're his property as such, being his parapakriti. They're his. So he sees them with equal vision, and he tries to bring them back to Krishna. And that's Krishna's property. That's what it says, right? When one class of person sees $100 lying on the floor, he thinks, he looks left, he looks right, no one is around. So then he puts it in his pocket. That is karma mark. Karma markies are like that. Then again, he sees $100 lying on the floor, he renounces it. It is not mine. He continues walking, giving chance for the karma person to pick it up and giving opportunity. Then highest renunciate, he's also renunciate. He picks up the $100 and he gives it back to whom it belongs. So he also renounces like the Gani, but his renunciation is plus something extra. He's giving it back to the person to whom it belongs. So the devotee is seeing with equal vision, everyone is Krishna's. Krishna's property is such, Krishna's energy, they belong to Krishna. And so he tries to bring them back to Krishna, give them back to Krishna. Just like giving the $100 back to whom it belongs, he tries to connect them back to Krishna. He also sees with equal vision. So the devotees are also called this Samadrisha. So the demigods seeing their glories, they're saintly, they see with equal vision, Bhagavat-prapanna, they're surrendered to God. And then another quality is mentioned, Gadaya Abhiguptam, they are personally protected by the Lord's club. So if you try to chastise them, you'll be chastised. Such is the case in Devas Muni, tried to chastise Ambarish Maharaj, he pulled out his sika. He was so disturbed. Ambarish Maharaj, anyway, short, Ambarish Maharaj was fasting for 1 year. Then time came to break his fast. And right when the time came to break his fast, Devas Muni, one great saint, sadhu, mystic, yogi, he came to see Ambarish Maharaj. So Ambarish Maharaj wanted to offer him some proper food stuff. Devas Muni is known as Ashutosha. He very easily angered and very easily pleased, but mostly angered most of the time. Past times he easily angered. And so he went to take his bath before eating. But while he was taking his bath, the time, the titi, came for breaking the fast. So Ambarish Maharaj thought, what should I do? If I eat before he comes back, he will certainly chastise me. He will curse me. But if I don't eat, I don't get the benefit of the fast. So then after discussing with the Vaishnavas there, finally he came to his own conclusion. His conclusion was, I'll take a little Charanamrita. It's considered like breaking the fast and not breaking the fast. If you do a complete fast without any water, then you can break fast with water only, or Chanamrita, you can break it. And it's considered like breaking and not breaking. So he did that, but Devas Muni He was taking baths, but he could understand by his mystic power. He has broken the fast. He became upset. He came back. He said, what type of Vaishnava are you? And then started blaspheming Devrasmani left, right, center. He became so frustrated, he pulled off his sika and created a fire demon to kill Ambarish Maharaj. Unfortunately for him, Krishna sent his chakra and wiped out the demon. And then the chakra began chasing Devrasmani. He had to fly all over the universe. And he went to Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva. They said, sorry, you finished. Nothing we can do. Then he went to Lord Narayana. Lord Narayana threw the chakra. Lord Narayana said, sorry, I can't do anything. You finished. And then he had to speak the glories of Vaishnavas at that time. And so then finally Devrasmani had to come back and take shelter of the lotus feet of Ambarish Maharaj and ask for forgiveness. If you commit some offense to a Vaishnava, then the only way to be freed from that is by seeking forgiveness from that Vaishnava. So this other quality is mentioned here. Gadaya Abhiguptam. They're protected by the club of the Lord. If you try to chastise the devotees, then you'll be chastised. So then the last line, Yamaraj is saying, Naisham Vayam, Nacha Vaya Prabhupada. Vayam, we, like Lord Brahma, Shiva, myself, we cannot chastise these devotees. We'll just speak of us. Prabhavami Dande, even Vaya Prabhavami Dande. Even time is not competent to chastise them. Time, Krishna mentions, is time is a great destroyer of everything, or it's a subduer of everything in the Bhagavad Gita in two different places. So even time factor cannot chastise them. What to speak of us? So such is the position of the Lord's devotees. Yamaraj is telling them, don't go to them. No one can chastise them. If you try to chastise them, you will be chastised. Their glories are sung by devatas. They see with equal vision. They're saintly. They're surrendered to God. And thus, they're protected by his club. No one can touch them. Any questions? This is the verse is saying this.
How do we keep our mind from and trying to analyze the motivations of devotees?
By intensifying your sadhana. These type of how-to questions are usually easily answered just by intensification of sadhana. Basically, people's sadhanas are really weak, and therefore their minds aren't controlled. It's kind of like that simple. They have weak sadhana, so mind is uncontrolled. When chanting japa, they don't focus on the name of Krishna, they focus on their thoughts. So weak sadhana, that's weak sadhana. One is getting up, but we're thinking of other things. We're not forcing the mind to think of Krishna. Just like I've been reading the Yoga Sutras, trying to understand chapter 6 Bhagavad Gita, it gives a lot of insight into practice, because the whole book is just basically about practice. It's not so much about philosophy. And he mentions there, as Krishna mentions in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that the Krishna's language in the Bhagavad Gita is that wherever the mind wanders, you should bring it back under the control of the self. And Patanjali mentions it as one has to make determined effort to keep the mind focused on one point. The idea is that in meditation, you have to choose some object. Patanjali recommends Ishvara as the object, but he gives other options as well. Some object for which you shall focus upon. And then you have to make, with effort, yatna, with effort and, there's another word that is used, with effort and unbroken determination, without interruption, focus on that object. And he said this requires a lot of effort to do that. And so Krishna's language, wherever the mind wanders, bring it back under the control of the self. And in that way, your practice will gain fruit. Otherwise, no fruit coming. So basically, our sadhanas are weak, so our minds are in control. It will go on like that. When doing service, we think of so many other things. We don't think of Krishna. We don't think of holy name. So, weak sadhana. Mind in control. You do like this only. Think of faults. Simple. Understand? No. Sadhana means practice, spiritual practice. So when we rise in the morning every day, it's called a practice. It's a daily practice to attain Krishna. So if our practice is weak, then our ability to control the mind will be weak. Our mind can only be controlled by spiritual practice. And our practice is particularly in relationship to the Absolute Truth. So it is Krishna who ultimately has to help us control our mind. There is a nice, now I'm thinking of a nice verse from the 87th chapter of the 10th canto. I don't have my computer. There it is mentioned that many yogis and ascetics, they try to control their mind, but they give up the lotus feet of their guru. As a result, they cannot control their mind. They're again brought back to the path of birth and death. So in Patanjali Yoga Sutras, also this mention, he's mentioning different ways by which the mind can become controlled, which is the prerequisite for practicing samadhi. And one of the sutras that he offers by focusing your mind on a saintly person. Interesting. One such sutra. By focusing all your attention on a yogi who has attained self-realization, he's freed from attachment, niskinchana, as mentioned by so many of the devotees in the Bhagavatam. Then by your concentration on that yogi, then you can also attain fixity in mind. So same verse as I'm saying from 87 chapter 10th canto. So in this way, our concentration is weak. We're not putting that much effort. We take practice kind of not that serious. So therefore, mind on control. You will go into these things. It's inevitable, unavoidable.
Really beautiful point you're bringing out, that by concentrating the mind on a saintly person. And I was just wondering if, like, for example, during Guru Puja, now none of us have... We have a direct relationship with Prabhupada, for instance, say by hearing his lectures or things like that, but none of us have had personal interaction with Prabhupada. But is that shouldn't really be a bar to focusing on his personality, right?
You hear Prabhupada memories. Hear from Prabhupada's disciples, what is Prabhupada's personality like? Then you focus on that. This is good. Any other question? Yeah.
Hi Krishna. I had a big misconception with my mind that I'm starting to get over. I was always trying to just like silence my thoughts. Like I thought that was the point. Like my brain is useless. I should just silence all thoughts. And I would always get frustrated when I was chanting because I was just trying to like empty everything. But now I'm starting to realize that you're supposed to use your brain for Krishna or use your thoughts.
Yeah.
Like put it to a saintly person. So I would always get super frustrated. And like I was like, why am I even thinking? Why am I even thinking? But then that itself is a thought, and it would always just like, be reoccurring.
Of course, that's a good question. Why am I thinking? There's the root of all problems, and the thinking too much. In one sense, it is still true that, in fact, the purpose of the yoga path is to silence the thoughts. That's kind of the concept. And in devotional service, the concept is actually there also. The silence, the way the material mind functions, you actually want to put it into that. But our methodology of doing it is by filling it up with Krishna. By filling it up with Krishna. So if you can make all the thoughts, you know, it's Krishnizing our consciousness. Such a thing comes in Patanjali Yoga Sutra. He speaks about Ishwarizing your chitta vritti, the vrittis in your mind. The vrittis are the permutations that come in the mind that think of all nonsense. So he speaks about Ishwarizing the vrittis, so that because there's all Ishwar coming up and all the pictures that are coming in your mind, those vrittis will actually move you toward the absolute truth. Prabhupada mentions the same thing, Krishnizing your consciousness. So that's what our program is supposed to be. It's a simpler program than trying to just silence the mind alone. It's more like a sublimation program, replacing the negative vrittis with the positive vrittis of Krishna consciousness. And that will push you toward the absolute truth. Until you do kind of enter a state where there's a cessation of all thought, in the sense of thought being qualified here as mundane thought, ends. Because you only see Krishna everywhere and you're lost in Krishna consciousness, as the perfected stages are described in devotional service. So the two can actually be harmonized. Any other point you want to say? Finished. Okay, any other thing? No. Next verse. So, who not to approach? Now, next verse. Who to approach? Who to go to? Tan anayatvam asato vimukam kunda padaravinda makarandara sarajasram. Niskinchanai paramahamsakulair asangair jushtat grihe nirayavartmani bhadha krishnan. Translation for Purushita Prabhupada Ki Jai. In translation, paramahamsas are exalted persons who have no taste for material enjoyment. Paramahamsa Kula, that's the third line. and who drink the honey of the Lord's lotus feet. Mukunda padara vinda makaranda rasarajasham. Okay, so who is Paramahamsa? Two qualities. My dear servants, bring to me for punishment only persons who are averse to the taste of that honey, who do not associate with Paramahamsas, and who are attached to family life and worldly enjoyment, which form the path to hell. So he mentions who to bring here. Purport. After warning the Yamadutas not to approach the devotees, Yamaraj now indicates who is to be brought before him. He specifically advises the Yamadutas to bring him the materialistic persons who are attached to household life merely for sex. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Nanmaitunadi Grihamedhi Sukham Hituchcham. People are attached to household life for sex only. They are always harassed in many ways by their material engagements, and their only happiness is that after working very hard all day, at night they sleep and indulge in sex. Nindraya hriyate naktam vyabhayena chava vayaha. At night, materialistic householders sleep or indulge in sex life. Diva charte haya rajan kutumbha bharanena va. During the day, they are busy trying to find out where money is. Where is money? And if they get money, they spend it to maintain their families. Now, if you say this to a common person, they're like, what is wrong with this? We are criticizing. Yamaraj specifically advises his servants to bring these persons to him for punishment, and not to bring the devotees, who always lick the honey at the lotus feet of the Lord, who are equal to everyone, and who try to preach Krishna consciousness because of sympathy for all living entities. Devotees are not liable to punishment by Yamaraj, but persons who have no information of Krishna consciousness cannot be protected by the material life of so-called family enjoyment. Srimad Bhagavatam says, Canto 2, verse 1, chapter 1, verse 4, Dehapatya kalatra di shratma saine shrat swaswapi te sham pramato nidhanam paschanapi napaschati. Such persons complacently believe that their nations, communities, or families can protect them, unaware that all such fallible soldiers will be destroyed in due course of time. In conclusion, one should try to associate with persons who engage in devotional service 24 hours a day. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So, Yamaraj continues the glorification of Vaishnavas here also, calling them Paramahamsa Kulayar, most exalted personalities. Paramahamsa means most exalted personality. And then Niskin Shanai Asangaya, they have no attachment to matter. This indication of someone who's very exalted and he has no attachment to matter, that's kind of the Tatashta Lakshana. Tatashta Lakshana means a secondary consideration. But the primary or secondary characteristic. But the primary characteristic of a Vaishnav, Mukunda Padaravinda Makaranda Rasada Jashram. He's always drinking the honey of the Krishna's feet. Krishna's feet compared to honey, and the devotee drinking that. Like that. Understand? Krishna's feet like honey, and the devotee is drinking that honey of Krishna's lotus. That means the nectar of chanting about him, hearing about Krishna, remembering Krishna. All these things is like drinking the honey. That's primary characteristic. Primary characteristic, he's drinking honey of Krishna's lotus feet. And because he's getting intoxicated, like Varuni, you drink too much honey, you become intoxicated. So he's getting intoxicated by drinking the honey, Krishna's lotus feet. So he's not aware of other things that are going on. He's completely detached from matter. He's intoxicated, like an intoxicated person. He gets so intoxicated, he doesn't know what is going on in the atmosphere around him. So he acts foolish also sometimes, isn't it? Just like when before we were devotees, we used to look forward to getting intoxicated and being free from all inhibitions and doing all sorts of nonsense things. In a similar way, devotee is so intoxicated by the nectar of Krishna's lotus feet, especially when he has love of God, that he acts in ways that is hard to comprehend for public. Sometimes opposite of public opinion, what is considered socially acceptable and so on. That is described by Nami Yogendras. How he dances, he laughs, he cries, and acts like a madman. Umadhavan. Umadhavan means acts like a madman, not caring for public opinion. Lokabaya. Why is he like this? Because he's intoxicated by the honey of Krishna's lotus feet. That's primary characteristic. Secondary characteristic is you're detached. You're not noticing other things. So the Paramahamsa, most advanced Vaishnavas, they're described as such. So don't go to those people. We're not competent to punish them. That point he's already made. So the Yamadutas, then who can we punish? We don't want to be out of employment. Who is there for punishing? So they're described. How they're described? Asato Vimukan. They're non-devotees. Vimukan. Vimukan means they're turned away from that intoxicating beverage of Krishna's lotus feet. Understand? They asato vimukan, they've turned away from that beverage of Krishna's lotus feet, those honey-like lotus feet of Krishna, which is just like my cousin. I often mention that when I first moved to New York, he took me to a club. Probably the first night I got there, he took me to a club. I didn't drink before I was a devotee also. I wasn't charmed by that, the notion of getting intoxicated. Thought it was stupid. But my cousin brought me to a club, and he said, "You want a beer?" And I said, "No." He came back to the table with a beer for me also. And then he said, "Try it." I said, "I didn't want one. Why are you bringing me this beer?" I said, "I didn't want one." He said, "Just try it." Peer pressure. Everyone was around me. They were saying, you're scared. They're trying to, what is it, reverse psychology? They're trying to. And I was like, "I'm not scared. I don't want to take it." But anyway, so they convinced me to try. I took a little sip. I said, "Oh, what is this nasty stuff?" My cousin said, "It is an acquired taste." I said, "Who in their right mind wants to acquire this?" No one in their right mind wants to acquire this. Therefore, they're all nonsense and rascals, muda. So, just as I turn my face away, vimukan, right? For them, that is asato vimukan. I turn my way from intoxication beer, then you are vimukan. What is your problem? So, in the same way that I would have turned my face away from alcohol at the time, the non-devotees, they turn their face away from the honey of Krishna's narrations, isn't it? As long as you speak about self-realization as all vague and ambiguous, everyone will sit nicely for the class. As soon as you say God, everyone gets to walk out, huh? They also told vimukan. They don't want to hear this nectar. You talk about Krishna's glories, his name, fame, qualities, activities. Immediately you bring it up, Krishna's glories, immediately they stand up, they leave the room. They don't want to hear anything. Also told vimukan. So as a result of turning away from that intoxicating beverage, then they are become attached to matter, right? See, those who drink the honey, they give up the attachment to matter that was mentioned for the Paramahamsas. Those who avoid the honey, then they get attached to matter, isn't it? See how it works? You understand how it works? If you drink the nectar of Krishna's lotus feet, then what happens? Michael, what happens? If you drink the nectar of Krishna's lotus feet, what happens? And then, because you're intoxicated by Krishna's narration, yeah, I hope y'all understanding the import of intoxication. Don't take it the wrong way. You become intoxicated by the happiness, intoxicated by happiness that comes with being connected to Krishna. And because you're happy by being connected to Krishna, then, not hearing. Then what happens? Then you become detached from matter. Understand? Understand the point? And if you turn away from that intoxicating beverage of Krishna's lotus feet, then you become attached to matter. Understand how it works? Either you drink this nectar and become freed, or you don't drink this nectar and become bound. Understand? Two options. Hold on. So asato vimukan, if you turn away from, they've turned away from this nectar of Krishna's lotus feet. So what is the result? Bhada trishnan. Their desires are bound by family attachment. That's being brought out here. Specifically, jushta grihe. Grihe bhada trishnan. Grihe means the household. So their desires become bound by the house. Bound by the house and everything that goes on in the house. So what goes on in the materialistic person's house? Illicit sex. Understand? Sleeping and illicit sex and working hard to make money so they can sleep nicely and have illicit sex. Only these things. That's part of illicit sex only. Watching television is also part of illicit sex. Everything in this world is a part of illicit sex, understand? Prabhupada said everything we see in this material world is a manifestation of illicit sex. Sex desire. That's a little bit, that blew my mind when I read it. It comes in the very first purport of the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada said the whole material manifestation is a result of sex desire. So when you see a big skyscraper building, you see the Sears Tower or whatever they call it now, downtown, you say, this is a result of sex desire. Yes. When we're doing Harinam downtown Chicago, we are on Michigan Avenue. All these stores are a result of sex desire. You can distribute book like that. Everything you're seeing here, all these stores, they're a result of sex desire. So watching TV, these are all components, constituents of the sexual desire. Hold on. Let me finish this point. So they, drushta grihe bhada chishtan, they are attached to the household. Their chishna means thirsting. Their desires, in other words, are bound to the house. And the things that go on in the house, illicit sex and sleeping, working hard to make money. And this is described as the niraya vartmani, the path that leads to hell. This is the path that leads to hell. So they don't drink the nectar, Krishna's lotus feet. The desires are bound by the house, and therefore they walk the path that leads to hell. Yes. And yes, they go down. You've understood my presentation of the philosophy. They go down to hell, and nothing can protect them from this. Deha patra kalatradishu atma sen yeshu asatsu api tesham pramato nididam. This means they're thinking that their wife, their children, their family, their society will give them protection. Why are they thinking like this? Tesham pramato nindadam, because they're crazy. Yeah. That's what it says. Pramato. Mata means crazy. So pramata means very crazy. Ridibly crazy. The reason they're thinking that their houses and their community and their governments and this will all give them protection is because they are crazy. Pramato. Pramato, Prabhupada translates it as attached in the verse in the Bhagavatam. Attachment is a form of insanity, in other words. Pashanapi na pashati. Pashanapi na pashati means seen but not seen. Which means they see what is going on in the world, but they don't examine the defects in them. They just go along with this material attachment without examining the defects of such attachment. Just like we are sometimes attached to material things, isn't it? Like opposite sex, for example, we are attached to material things. But we don't examine what are the defects of that attachment. We just go on mindlessly following the attachment as it is taking us straight to hell. It is guiding us this way, this way. Come. Now this way. And we're just like zombies, just following like zombies. It's leading us straight to hell, but we are following. Why we follow like this? Pashanapinapashati. Because we see, but we don't examine the defects. There's no examination of what's actually going on. So as a result, we remain attached to the house. One glides down to hell. There's a nice verse from the Bhagavatam. Tavhad ragadayasnenas tavhat karam griham griham tavan moha angri nikado yavat krishna tejana. Yavat krishna tejana means as long as people do not become your devotees. Lord Brahma is praying to Krishna, 14th chapter, 10th canto. As long as people do not become your devotees, yavat krishna tejana. If people do not become your devotees, then what is their lot? What is their position? So he describes, tava ragadayasenas, their desires remain thieves. In other words, the desires for material enjoyment steals from them happiness. They never can taste happiness. Their desires steal that away from them. And tavat, karam griham griham, their households remain a prison cell with nice curtains, but a prison only. And tavat, moha angri negado, and their attachment for family, moha. Their attachment for family remains foot shackles, binding them to samsara. This actually is a verse glorifying the residents of Braja who are all householders. Because Lord Brahma is speaking so many verses glorifying the Brajavasis. So then the question may come up, but they're all householders. How they can be so exalted? How can they be more exalted than renunciates, sannyasis, and paramahamsas? So in this way, Brahma recites this verse, which is an indirect glorification of Brajavasis. Because they are devotees, in other words, because they are devotees, their homes, their affection for each other, all elevates them to an exalted level. But if you minus that bhakti to Krishna, then these same things trap you in the material world, lead you to the path of hell. Nirayai vatmani. Understand? So this simple verse. There are two options. One option, drink the honey, give up material attachment which leads to hell. Other option, don't drink the honey. Your desires remain bound to the house and what goes on in the house. Well, go down to the hell. Two options. Two options are there. Are there any questions about this? So he's saying, Tan anayadvam, bring to me those persons who are turned away from that honey and therefore they're attached in this way, they're going to hell. So is there any way coming this direction? We only help them. Bring them more rapidly, so to speak. Yes. You have a question also.
Can you give an example of how sex desire could cause this big mess?
How sex desire?
Yeah.
How sex desire causes the whole material manifest? Well, sex desire is the impetus behind all activity in the material world. Maybe the easiest way to conceive of it now, in the modern context, is by they apply a misnomer to sex desire. They call it love. It's actually a huge misnomer, and in that way, if you think of it in that way, out of love, everyone is doing things. Right? People are in search of love, so called. They're looking for love and companionship. And in order to achieve that, what are they willing to do in order to achieve that? It's really sex desire that's going on. So, for example, young boy wants to get with young girl. This is general context. Then he takes up some job. Because you can't be broke. How you will maintain? So some job has to be taken up, isn't it? So first you take up some job, and then you have to work very hard to maintain that job. And then you cannot have sex all day. That is not possible unless you become like a pigeon or rabbit. So you don't do sex all day. So then you need activities that stimulate the sexual desire, that keep you enthusiastic for sex life. So you create an atmosphere that's passionate. You need a passionate atmosphere that stimulates the sexual desire. And so you have things like restaurants and movies and all these things, which motive passion, in other words. Prabhupada, in fact, describes the motive passion as a young boy is attracted to a young girl, a young girl is attracted to a young boy. In the 14th chapter of Gita, he says motive passion means a young boy is attracted to a young girl is attracted to a young boy, like this. He calls it motive passion. So then they create a passionate atmosphere in order to stimulate and facilitate that particular sort of attraction. And this way you go on, everything starts expanding from there. And in order to maintain that, you need to do other things. The maintenance is not easy. So you need to create other things that are for maintaining these big passionate manifestations, all which are on the baseline meant for just enjoying. And sex life, sex desire, you know, you can think of it, you can categorize it in a more broad category. It's a desire to enjoy. The desire to exploit the material manifestation for your own pleasure is sex desire. So you can think of it in a broad category like that. Very broad. So there, everything is a manifestation of this enjoying spirit, especially in the age of Kali Yuga. It is, none of these things are meant for facilitating God consciousness in any sort, as in previous ages, previous world ages. Everything is there to facilitate enjoyment, exploitation. So this desire to exploit the material nature can be also called as the sex desire. So everything, and therefore, is a manifestation of such desire to enjoy. Like that. Is it satisfied enough? All right, you wanted to say something. We need to talk.
It seems like there's a... Would you say that there's a difference between just God consciousness and then also giving pleasure to Krishna? Because it seems like there's religions where they're trying to become conscious of God, but they may not be so interested in actually giving pleasure to God.
Yeah,
whereas that seems to be a...
I guess we might say like that. Yeah, is it? Would you say there's a difference between God consciousness and giving pleasure to Krishna in the context of there being many religions who strive for God consciousness? But at least that's their advertisement. But they may not seem to exhibit that level of consciousness where they're really working for the pleasure of God as such. As one might use language like that to describe it, I would maybe say it's a spectrum of God consciousness. Because, like, for example, the next verse, we're going to read it. People in Varnashram who work only for their sense pleasure, but they follow God's system, they're also considered dear to the Supreme Lord, according to the Nectar of Instruction, verse 10. Even though they're on a very low level of God consciousness, because they don't care for God's pleasure, but they also are called dear to the Lord. Why? Because they follow his system. So then, in a very generic sort of sense, you might say it is God consciousness on the lower level, lowest level, and the desire to exclusively give pleasure to Krishna is God consciousness in its highest manifestation. But so I would rather express it as a spectrum, as making maybe somewhat of a sectarian distinction between, you know, that's not really God consciousness and this is God consciousness. More like a spectrum of different levels of advancement or development. Is that like what? Is that like Jnana Yoga? No. What do you mean by that?
Devote yourself to him.
Okay, yes, when you try to realize the absolute truth without devoting yourself to him, yes, that can be a manifestation of the Jnana Marga. But I think what he was referring to, like in modern religions and so on, we can't say that they're on the path of Jnana either. Generally, they're on the path of karma. Fruit of activity. They're trying to enjoy the fruits of their work. And they actually say that God wants them to do that. They kind of conceive it like that God wants me to work very hard and have a nice house and a nice wife and enjoy with her also. Why would God give so many pleasurable things unless he wants us to enjoy? Isn't it? If he didn't want us to enjoy, why would he give so many pleasurable things? They say like this. So then, but they have some sort of concept of God, some sort of imprint that there's a God and that you should worship him. So it's not a very high level of God consciousness, at least as far as we would understand it, but it's something. So maybe something is better than nothing. So I would probably express it as a spectrum. Because it's fair. You know, and many of them look at us in another sort of way also. So in that way, that's our categorization. Any other questions about this? This point. I'm going to do one more verse because it's the same theme only. The same, Yamaraj is just saying who should be brought to him. Same point is being made. So this is the last verse. Yamaraj is saying who should be brought to him. Jivana Vakti Bhagavat Gunanama Dheyam Chetash Chanasmarati Tach Taranaravindham Krishnaya no namoti yach chira ekadapi tan anayadvamasato krita vishnu krityan. Let's do the words word meaning because it's on two different pages here, so I can't look at it properly. The words word meaning gives all the insight. So jiva, the tongue. Na, not, vakti, chant, bhagavat, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Guna, transcendental qualities. Nama, and the holy name. Deyam, imparting. Okay, I get it. So the one whose tongue does not chant the guna and the nama of Bhagavan, that's the first line. His tongue doesn't chant. Then the second line, cheta. The heart, cha, also, na, not, smriti, remembers, tat, his, charana aravindham, lotus feet. So his heart never remembers Krishna, not even one time remembering, not even one time. That comes up in the next line. So then Krishnaya, unto Lord Krishna, through his deity in the temple, no, not. That reminds me of the kids sometimes. Their parents try to get their kids to offer obeisances. Sometimes you see them trying to like force their heads down. And the kid, no! No, not. Namati, bows, yat, whose, shira, head, ekadha, api,
Even once, not even one time. So not even one time they're bowing down before the deity of the Lord, offering their obeisances. Tan, them, anayadvam, bring them to me. Vishnu Krityan, oh sorry, I missed a verse here. Asata, the non-devotees, Akrita, not performing, Vishnu Krityan, duties toward Lord Vishnu. Bring to me those non-devotees who are not performing the responsibility of human life. Akrita Vishnu Krityan. So translation, my dear servants, please bring to me only those sinful persons who do not use their tongues to chant the holy names and qualities of Krishna, whose hearts do not remember the lotus feet of Krishna even once, and whose heads do not bow down even once before Lord Krishna. Send me those who do not perform their duties toward Vishnu, which are the only duties in human life. Please bring me all such fools and rascals. Purport by Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. The word Vishnu Krityan is very important. In this verse, because the purpose of human life is to please Lord Vishnu. Varnashram Dharma is also meant for that purpose, as stated in the Vishnu Purana. Varnashrama acharvata purushena parapuman vishnur aradhyate panta nanyat tatushakaranam. Human society is meant to follow strictly the Varnashram Dharma, which divides society into four social divisions, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, and four spiritual divisions, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyasa. Varnashram Dharma easily brings one nearer to Lord Vishnu, who is the only true objective in human society. Unfortunately, however, people do not know that their self-interest is to return home back to Godhead or to approach Lord Vishnu. Yes. Durashaya ye bahirartamanina. Instead, they are simply bewildered. Every human being is expected to perform duties meant for approaching Lord Vishnu. Therefore, Yamaraj advises the Yamadutas to bring him those persons who have forgotten their duties toward Vishnu. Akrita Vishnu Krityan. One who does not chant the holy name of Vishnu, Krishna, who does not bow down to the deity of Vishnu, and who does not remember the lotus feet of Vishnu is punishable by Yamaraj. In summary, all of Vaishnavas, persons unconcerned with Lord Vishnu, are punishable by Yamaraj. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So Prabhupada is mainly focusing on the last line of this verse. So he's giving a summary, a conclusive understanding of who should be brought to him. Those whose tongues do not chant the glories of Krishna's qualities and his name. Those who do not remember Krishna even once. Those who do not even bow down to the deity even once. All these things have great, great power. If you bow down to the deity even once, you can be saved from going to hell and you can get liberation. That story I told, coming from the Puranas, where there's a mouse, there's also a bird. One pigeon is there. He falls in front of the temple, or he's attacked by some dog or something. And he's on the verge of dying. The dog takes the pigeon's body, this is mentioned in Bhakti Sandarbha, and he circumambulates the temple. And because of that, that pigeon got liberated. Such as, of course, these are exceptional examples to demonstrate the power of bhakti. Another one is the mouse. He used to like to eat at the Giwigs. This is actually true. I do like the Giwigs, because I remember when we had to put the... We used to, when we were doing the deity worship, we would take the lamp, the ghee wick and the lamp, and we would make the preparation the previous day and leave it in the drawer. And the next morning, sometimes mouse would have come in and eaten at the ghee wicks. So they like ghee wicks, it seems. And ghee wicks is tasty for them. And so this mouse had a habit of eating a ghee wick, so he ate one ghee wick one time, and that was still burning, and his tail caught on fire. And he burned to death, a very sad story, but he burned in front of the deity, that's a plus. And as a result, he became a queen in the kingdom next life, who had an intense attachment to doing arti. And then after that life, got liberated to Vaikuntha. So these are exceptional examples to show the great power of bhakti to the Lord. But not even once some person is doing this, not remembering Lord once, not bowing down once, not chanting the glories of the Lord, even once, then they should be brought to me. Why they should be brought to me? So this is the last line says. The last line says, Tan Anayadvam, bring to me those non-devotees, Asuto, Akrita Vishnu Krityan, because they don't perform their duties to Lord Vishnu. So that's the main point that Prabhupada is elaborating on in the purport. They don't follow their duty to Lord Vishnu. So we were discussing this last night also in the Ishopanishad, that Prabhupada was saying that we should be careful to use our initiative to carry out the role that is designated for us. I remember this, Prabhupada was saying this. And we were discussing how the necessity between the balance of our freedom to use our initiative on the one side, and on the other side, the responsibleness that should come to protect our freedom from degrading into a destructive form. Remember we were mentioning this point yesterday, last night, it's after you all left. This is Maharaj had given a presentation here at the Sunday Feast. This author was there. His name is Victor something. He wrote a book called Man's Search for Purpose. And that book was about him living on a Nazi concentration camp and how he dealt with that and survived it. That's what the book is more or less about. And he speaks about trying to find purpose and so on. So Maharaj had given a PowerPoint. It begins with an F. Victor something with an F. Anyway. So in that book, there's many famous quotes. Maharaj has presented some of them to us. One of the famous quotes, he says that in America we have the Statue of Liberty. But he says, but that Statue of Liberty should be balanced with a Statue of Responsibleness on the West Coast. So the Statue of Liberty on the East Coast should be balanced with a Statue of Responsibleness on the West Coast, so that America doesn't tip over, so to speak, if you can get an image. You know, there's an image like this. So the Statue of Liberty, you got a problem. So it should become balanced with the Statue of Responsibleness on the West Coast. And that way, that tension should be kept in order for there to be progressive society. You understand? Should keep that tension. Should be kept so that the society can be progressive. So we have to, there is the desire, of course, and we do this also, to use our initiative, our freedom on the one side, but it has to be unbalanced by responsibleness on the other side. Otherwise, everyone destroys each other. That's the result of unbridled freedom means that society will self-destruct. So therefore, we have rules and all these things to do. So the rules of God are given in the Varnashram system. Krishna sets up a perfect scientific social system so that the living entities don't destroy each other. They can be materially prosperous, and after all of that, they can gain liberation also. But they become asuras. Remember from Ishopanishad, Prabhupada discusses the asuras. There are two types of asuras. Remember? You remember? What are the two types of asuras? Ishopanishad. We just read this. So one who knows and he neglects his duties, that's one type of demon. Asura, will non-godly person. The other type? No, not quite. Close. One who knows and neglects, and the other one? One who does not know. He also called a demon. So Prabhupada said, therefore, everyone here in Kali Yuga, demon only. Asura, non-godly person, because they either know and neglect, or they don't know. And as a result of their not knowing, they also take to demoniac tendencies, the desire to exploit the material nature. It's not a judgmental statement, it's a reality. So now, Tevidu Sratagatam Vishnu, they do not know what is the actual goal, they do not know about their duties to Vishnu, and there are a few who know, they don't follow those duties to Vishnu. As a result, they become more and more demoniac. They become more and more atheistic. And along with atheism means impersonalism. And along with impersonalism is the tendency to view the whole environment as open for my enjoyment. I give some example. Just like if I see a phone, then if I know whose phone it is, then I see that person's phone. So I say, so your phone is there? I say, oh, this is Acharya Nisha's phone. That means I see the phone personally. There's Acharya Nisha's phone. But then if I don't know who is the proprietor of that phone, then I say, oh, here's a phone for me to use. Understand? There's two ways you can look at existence. You can look at it personally or impersonally. So if you do not know Vishnu, then you do not know the goal of life is Vishnu also. Therefore, you do not know your duties to Vishnu. Then you will look at the landscape impersonally. As a result, you become atheist, you become exploitative, you become demoniac as a result of that vision. And that way, this is going on. They asato akrita Vishnu kritam. They do not know their duties to Vishnu. So they become more and more atheistic, more and more impersonal. They don't acknowledge the proprietorship of the Lord. And Prabhupada says in the Ishopanishad, now Ishopanishad is coming out all in my head. Ishopanishad. And the end of the first mantra, Prabhupada says that the root cause of sin, do you remember that? Huh? Yeah, the root cause of sin is ignorance, but he kind of... deliberate disobedience in relationship to recognizing the Lord as a proprietor. So you don't see him as a proprietor, and therefore you try to enjoy. He said that is the root of sinful activity. So as they, Natevi do swarja katemi Vishnu, they do not know Vishnu is the goal, therefore they don't follow any duties. They become more and more atheistic, more and more impersonal vision of the world. Then as a result, that means they don't acknowledge the proprietorship of the Lord. Prabhupada said that lack of acknowledgement is the root of all sinful engagement. And there, and we see the result in the modern society. How much is going on in the name of progress? So much destruction is happening. So, Yamaraj said, bring me those persons. Those persons you should bring to me. They don't once chant glories of the Lord, offer obeisances, remember him, and they don't acknowledge their responsibility. They only acknowledge their rights. They only talk about how much rights they're having, this right, that right, that right. They only talk about their right and never talk about their duties. As a result, a big imbalance is there. See, this is, suppose they're here on this side and they're talking about their freedom, so they go flying up and then fall down into the hell. But Yamaraj is saying, he said, Nidraya Bhartmani is the path of hell. There, on this side, too much emphasis on the freedom part. They go flying out and fall down into the abyss of hell. This last verse. Any questions about this? Any final points? The simple verses, who to bring to me, who not to bring to me. But very nice verses also. Any final thoughts, questions? No, okay. Thank you all very much then. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.